featuring survivors, authors, advocates, professionals, and artists. Then at 10, it's Film at 11 with KBOO's Doug Holm for a full hour of great unorthodox holiday movies, followed at 11 a.m. by its Pacific Underground. Don't forget that you can hear all of these programs after they air on KBOO.FM or on iTunes and Google Play. Want a third way to listen to all of your favorite KBOO programming? Then download our mobile app today.
KBOO would like to give special thanks to our local community partners who have donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Brunchbox with two locations, on the west side in downtown Portland at 620 Southwest 9th Avenue and on the east side at 676 Southeast Morrison Street. Brunchbox serves up a menu full of burgers and sandwiches every day from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. Lunch was provided by Little River Cafe, located in downtown Portland at 0315 Southwest Montgomery Street. Serving food made from fresh ingredients, Little River Cafe is open for breakfast and brunch daily from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. And dinner was provided by Dove Phoebe, located at 2727 Northeast Gleason Street in Portland. Open daily from 4 p.m. to 10 p.m., Dove Vivi serves handmade cornmeal crust pizza. For more information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 or go to kboo.fm/give right now.
Have you ever wondered how a radio station works? Find out by joining KBOO's engineering committee. Or, do you have a radio, electrical, or audio engineering background and are looking for a good way to use those skills for good? Join KBOO's Engineering Committee. KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, unless otherwise noted. The next engineering committee will meet Thursday, December 12th at 7 p.m.
It's one thing to have all of these opinions, but giving to KBOO means you're actually doing something about them, and it's you're actually helping these activists and these movements do their good work.
And you can help too by doing your good work. For KBOO Portland, where it's 9:02 a.m., and we're going to hear Madness Radio. Meantime, this is a great opportunity for you to call 877-500-5266 and make your pledge of support right now.
What does it mean to be called crazy in a crazy world? Listen to Madness Radio, Voices and Visions from Outside Mental Health, sponsored by peer-run support communities Freedom Center, The Icarus Project, and Portland Hearing Voices. Madness Radio can be heard on FM stations on the Pacifica Radio Network and is online at kboo.fm/madnessradio. Welcome to Madness Radio. This is your host, Will Hall. Today, my guest is Joshua Wolf Schenck. He's the author of Lincoln's Melancholy, How Depression Challenged a President and Fueled His Greatness. So welcome to Madness Radio, Joshua Wolf Schenck.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's really interesting to read your work about Lincoln's depression because your whole perspective on the meaning of his suffering comes from very different than the medical perspective that we often think of. So it's really inspiring to have you on Madness Radio, and I really encourage people to check out your book, Lincoln's Melancholy. Now, for those of us who maybe are listening internationally or aren't so familiar with Lincoln, Abraham Lincoln is considered one of the greatest American politicians, if not the great president, leader. And what were some of his extraordinary achievements, just to kind of give us a context?
Well, the big story with Lincoln is that he was elected at a time of mounting conflict between the North and the South and the United States, and the conflict really centered on slavery and its future. And Lincoln was the leader of a coalition that believed that in stopping the expansion of slavery, although he was not what we would call an abolitionist, at least not at the beginning of his term, but his election on an anti-slavery expansion platform sparked the secession of the southern states, and the Civil War began soon after. So Lincoln was a war president, and his conduct of the war, but more importantly, the philosophy of democracy, an anti-slavery democracy that he laid out, really became the foundation for the country moving forward. So even though, you know, George Washington and Thomas Jefferson had founded the United States formally in the late 18th century, Lincoln really became a founding father himself, and many of the texts that he left, including the Gettysburg Address and the second inaugural address and many others, are foundational not only in the United States but all over the world. People read Lincoln and consider him to be a kind of a visionary for what a civil society can look like.
And what was his background? How did he become a politician, and how did he eventually become president?
He was a young man from the sticks. He was part of the working poor in Kentucky, Indiana, Illinois. He came up as a shopkeeper and then learned the law and became a lawyer. And alongside his law career, he began in local state politics. He became a state assemblyman and became a leader of the Whig Party, as it was known in Illinois in the early 19th century. He served one term as a United States congressman. He was a major intellectual and political force in Illinois, although he was extremely obscure in the national scene until the 1850s, when he became increasingly well known for his anti-slavery positions, in particular in opposition to a guy named Stephen Douglas, who was one of his nemeses. Was a major figure, a United States senator, and in conflict with Douglas, and in the course of debates with him, including these formal debates when they were running against each other for Senate, Lincoln rose to national prominence and was nominated for president in 1860 and elected.
So Lincoln really came from quite humble origins, and just because of his talent and perseverance, rose to become one of the great politicians of our time. It's an extraordinary story in and of itself that says a lot about democracy and the idea of people being able to just come from the grassroots and make their way into national leadership.
Yeah, that's right. It's the beginning of the idea of the self-made man, and Lincoln really is the embodiment of it.
And so it may be really surprising for people to hear that Lincoln was someone who struggled with what we would now call depression for his whole life. Is that right?
Yes, it is surprising. It surprised me. I started working on this story when I was in my mid-20s, and I was living in Washington, D.C., not far from the Lincoln Memorial, and that was my whole view of Lincoln, was what we see in the Lincoln Memorial, which is this view of a man as God. In fact, the Lincoln Memorial is designed, the model for it is a statue of Zeus on his throne, and it's very intentionally designed to create this feeling of awe in people who approach it. You climb up these huge marble steps, and you're in this temple, and his words are inscribed, etched in marble on the walls. And this towering figure in his great chair, looking peaceful and wise, it was totally shocking to me when I began to encounter the story of Lincoln's depressions as a young man, which are classic depressions of despair and sorrow that's never ending, and a feeling of hopelessness, ruminations on suicide, and a real alarm in his friends and community, in a sense that he really was in danger of killing himself, to the extent that twice in his early life there were suicide watches. They took active steps to keep him from hurting himself. Alongside this, in his late 20s, Lincoln came out of the closet, so to speak, as someone who was unusually morbid in his mind and ruminated and was preoccupied. He loved to read maudlin poetry, which, you know, gave expression to the cast of his mind. And while, you know, sorrow and many of these qualities are familiar to any human being, Lincoln really thought that he was unusual. He thought that he had a melancholy that was out of the norm, and that was the perspective of his friends too. They thought that he was a very unusually depressed man.
So when we hear that Lincoln was depressed, we're not just talking about he had some periods of feeling bad or feeling low, that he actually did have a very severe experience of what we would consider clinical depression, or whatever phraseology you want to use it. He was really suffering to the extreme that we think of depression can be for someone.
Yes, he was. And this gets to the core of the book and what's so interesting, because there are these two perspectives that we have to hold in mind simultaneously. And F. Scott Fitzgerald said, you know, this is the test of a first-rate mind. Can you hold two opposing ideas in mind? The first is that the clinical perspective is valuable, and that, you know, we can bring that to bear in this case and learn something about Lincoln and learn something about our own life. And from this perspective, if you present the facts of Lincoln's case to any modern clinician, it is absolutely unambiguous. I mean, if you just go down the criteria in the diagnostic and statistical manual, and you compare that against the very clear events of Lincoln's depressions as a young man, it's clear that he had major depressive episodes, and that he had at least two of them, probably more, but at least two of them, which is enough to say this man had what we would today call major depressive disorder. The second perspective we have to hold in mind, though, is that this is of limited utility. The value of diagnosing someone is in leading to some kind of treatment, and Lincoln is not before us to be treated. Diagnosis is also a snapshot of any moment in time, and with Lincoln, we have a whole story to tell. We have a whole life that he lived in front of us, and while I'm drawing in the book on modern psychiatry and psychology and literature and a whole variety of perspectives, sociology as well, I'm also trying to get into Lincoln's head, into the perspective of the world around him, so that we can learn today from the wisdom that was embodied in his life. So this leads us to a perspective that really challenges the clinical perspective, which says, you know, the clinical perspective says, look, let's identify disease so that we can treat it. And Lincoln's life suggests that we also need to identify qualities of character and qualities of a life that, while maybe troubling, maybe even dangerous, also have elements of value. And over the course of Lincoln's life, the challenges of his despair were wrapped up in what made him a man preoccupied with meaning, hardworking, searching in his mind for something bigger than the ordinary world around him. And this was a huge part of what led him to what we so appreciate about him.
You're listening to Madness Radio here on KBOO Community Radio in this, our holiday membership drive. This is the last day to support public affairs during our membership drive. So if you have put it off, we urge you now to be one of those last minute givers and support KBOO right now. As you hear about the challenging of the clinical perspectives on Lincoln, we hear our challenging perspectives, not just the clinical perspectives, but on a variety of issues. Now is the time for us to band together. While other media outlets normalize exclusion, KBOO brings in the excluded voices and encourage communication and sharing. Now is the time to support KBOO, and we urge you to go to your phone, 877-500-5266. Pull that phone out, maybe pull over if you're driving, or take a moment out of whatever you're doing and pick up your phone and punch in those numbers, 877-500-5266, to give to KBOO right now. I would encourage you to give maybe a $25 a month contribution. I know it sounds big, but that is so important. And you get to join the KBOO Hoodie Brigade when you give $25 a month. I'm Jenka. I'm here with Barbara. So happy to join you this morning.
Well, we're talking today, where we're hearing talk about how Lincoln's depression actually encouraged him, and we provided him with a way of really thinking differently, and that's what we do on KABU. I hope we're not too depressed, but I think what we hear at KABU do is we sort of come out of the current Trump depression to give us a real energizing way of fighting back, of resisting, and of creating a new world. And a very important part of creating a new world is having the media that can express that, and that's what KABU is. We've been doing that for 51 years. You can join this free expression, this creative expression, by calling right now at 877-500-5266. You can go online to kboo.fm, no matter where you are in the world, and join this incredible movement to open the airwaves and open our minds and really push forward. This is an exciting time. And by the way, I want to mention that at 10:30 today, there's going to be another climate strike, and it's meeting at Chemansky Park, which is, I think, at between 3rd and 4th on the park blocks. I mean, on the we used to call it the Women's Park Block. But anyway, it's down nearby the Justice Department. And you can, if you are downtown, you can join the students that are striking. KABU is part of that voice. Mm-hmm. KABU has been bringing these voices for 51 years. So again, call 877-500-5266 and become a member of this incredible vital force.
KABU is always at the forefront of these movements, you know, whether it's Occupy, whether it is the civil rights movement, whether it is Standing Rock. We sent a reporter to Standing Rock for those water defenders to fight the pipelines. We are here and we're providing that voice for people to actually get the news out, and something that is substantiated, something that is verified. And in fact, you can actually turn to KABU and find out what's going on in your community. Turn that depression and disempowerment from the current political state into empowerment by right now joining a community radio effort. 877-500-5266. Like Barbara said, you can also do it online, kabu.fm. And we love to hear the phones specifically light up right now. 877-500-5266.
So we've been talking about Lincoln's depression or his melancholy kind of as a feature of his personality or his character. I'm also very interested when I hear people talk about depression, if there might be something that he was depressed about, some loss or trauma or experience or hardship that he had maybe in his family or his childhood. Was there something that may have been driving him to be depressed?
It's a really good question, and I have to say we don't know. There was a significant loss in Lincoln's childhood. His mother died when he was a boy. His sister died in childbirth when he was older. I think he was a teenager at the time. His first breakdown, the first time he was suicidal, and really the time his depression became manifest, seems to have been provoked by the death of a young woman that he knew well, was friendly with. There may have been some romance there, although it's entirely uncertain, but it's very clear that after her death, Lincoln went off the rails. And perhaps that, you know, woke in him a real tenderness around the death of loved ones. That said, it was really quite common to lose a mother in that time. I think that I remember right that half of the U.S. presidents in the 19th century lost a parent when they were young. So many of the things that Lincoln went through were common, and yet clearly his depression is not a common depression. Lincoln actually addressed this directly with his usual acuity. He said that there may be particular causes of a depression, but they really only get you if you have a nervous temperament to begin with. And so he understood that, yes, there were sort of external phenomena that were relevant and that needed to be addressed, although he didn't talk about death in the family. He was talking about things like bad weather and so forth. But you have to understand that it's the interaction between these phenomena and a tender mind, someone who is vulnerable to these moods in the first place, that leads someone to, you know, to where he was, which was morbidly depressed.
That's interesting. So even more than 100 years later, that era was still struggling with the kind of the mystery of depression. And, well, is it nature? Is it nurture? Is it some combination of both? We haven't really gotten much further in that conversation, it sounds like.
It is the eternal conversation, and it's clear that there's a relationship between nature and nurture, and it's now become clear that, you know, there's even a relationship between nature and nurture on the genetic level, that this field of epigenetics demonstrates that it's not that we have genes or don't have genes, that it's the way that genes get activated.
When Lincoln was going through this suffering, did he seek treatment? Was he trying to get his suffering alleviated? Were there kinds of doctors and different things that he did in his life to overcome his depression?
The answer is yes, but let me give some context. In order to understand Lincoln's melancholy, you have to look at his life according to these distinct phases that he went through. In his mid-20s, he had these major episodes. He was suicidal. He was very open about it. And he did seek treatment. And one time in particular, he was under the care of a physician, and that physician was doing for him the ordinary things that were done at the time, which seem, you know, bordering on barbaric now, bleeding and leeching and mercury, which was these mercury pills were very common treatments for what was then understood to be a disease relating to the black bile, according to this old Greek idea of the black bile. And they thought they could just expunge that bile from the body, that it would lead to improvements. And mercury was a common treatment for that because, you know, when you ingest a poison, it does induce sweating and defecation and all kinds of things that they thought were the body kind of ridding itself of the black bile. That phase of Lincoln's life ran from his mid-20s to his early 30s, and after that he got married, he began to have children, and his melancholy did not go away, but he no longer was kind of public about it in the same way. He was not frequently confessing his despair. He was not having these suicidal episodes. It became a much quieter, even in some ways philosophical melancholy. He would sit on the side of the room for long stretches of time. People were very aware that he was a melancholy man, but he was not seeking treatment. He was, to the extent that he was trying to get help, it was through strategies that he began to employ, like reading literature and trying to improve himself in his mind, trying to sharpen his mind through logical exercises, and especially telling jokes and stories, which was his primary therapy and a kind of self-developed therapy, although it was also very social. That was Lincoln would, for hours at a time, would tell these tall tales, and you know, he always wanted to know who had good jokes. He would soak them up, and then he would recycle them. This is a Southern tradition. If you go, you know, down in the Southern United States today, you can hear people swapping stories, and Lincoln was a real master of this.
I'm curious about why that transition took place. Why did he go from someone seeking treatment to developing his own strategies and approaches and ways of dealing with it himself?
I think about this a lot. I'm now 43 years old. I wrote this book from my late 20s to my mid-30s. I think that there's an element of this that is in the life cycle. Young people are more voluble and more comfortable in some ways letting it all hang out. And as time passes, there's a more resigned quality. With experience, one comes to accept that one is not entirely alone, and that these things need on some level to be endured. And in some ways, I think the early depressions of Lincoln's life were this kind of all or nothing thing, that he thought he needed to be rid of the suffering entirely, or that he would have to kill himself. And there was a shift into a quieter, more subtle, even more melancholy perspective in some ways, that this was his lot in life, and it was a matter of, you know, doing the work every day to try to be as good as he could, which is not the same necessarily as feeling as good as he could.
You're listening to Madness Radio here on KBOO Community Radio, and this is the last day of public affairs during our holiday membership drive. Now is the time to support KBOO Community Radio. KBOO is funded by our listeners, so we're asking you to go to your phone right now and dial 877-500-5266 or go to kboo.fm and become a member or renew your membership. Here we have one of the only forms of media left to us that's free from the surveillance society. We don't have advertisements. We don't have hidden tracking devices to follow what you click and then funnel ads to you based on your perceived preferences. No, we are bringing it to you straight. You're hearing this incredible program that's produced right here locally by Will Hall and then syndicated nationally. I mean, this is a really, really popular program that is listened to across the country, and it's produced right here at KBOO Community Radio. By volunteers. The number to call to support this effort and to support this work, this locally produced radio right here in your community, is 877-500-5266. My name is Jenka. I'm here with Barbara, and we are very excited to be here to share with you why it's important to support KBOO right now.
And how much should you support us for? Well, I would say, I mean, Jenka mentioned $25 a month, which is, I think, a little bit of a hefty figure for a lot of our listeners. But if you can do that, that would be great. I also like the idea that I heard as I was coming over to the station of the Trump bump. So if you're giving $10 a month right now, how about giving us $11 a month? And this is sort of like all the ways that small incremental contributions can amount to massive amounts of energy, money, whatever.
And this was a conclusion that
Everyone who starts a new monthly pledge or increases their pledge by $2 is entered to win a $25 gift card to Porque No Taqueria. And that sustains KBOO on a monthly basis year-round. It's a very, very good way to give. If you're not doing a monthly contribution already, do it now or give us that Trump bump and increase it.
And the number to do that, the way to do that is to call right now at 877-500-5266. You can go online at kboo.fm. And again, the phone number to call, 877-500-5266. We have a couple friendly operators waiting to answer your call. So join KBOO right now.
This was a conclusion that Lincoln came to in the depth of his despair that he wanted to live, and he wanted to live to do something meaningful for the world that he would be remembered for. And that itself, I think, it's inspirational, but it's also, there's element of melancholy in it, that he did not intend to be a happy man. He intended to do something for other people that would be linked to his name through the ages.
So that perspective and that sort of life purpose arose from his experiences of depression and melancholy and the struggle that he went through?
They're certainly related, and just in terms of story, the moment when Lincoln really laid out his mission in life is at the moment of the depth of his despair, and he did it in a very explicit way. He told his best friend at the time, Joshua Speed, that he wanted to kill himself, that he could kill himself, but that he wasn't going to kill himself because he believed there was something meaningful for him to do in the world. If you just look at his own words, yes, there's a very direct link. Now, Lincoln was someone who was, you know, service-minded from a much earlier age and had this ambition even before his depression came upon him. So I don't want to tell a simplified story, but certainly the depression is a major part of this picture.
And was he religious? Did he have a spiritual or religious perspective on what he was going through and maybe why, and maybe that there was some purpose or meaning in his suffering as someone dealing with depression or melancholy?
That's a great question and a critical one. And the last chapter of the book is devoted to Lincoln's spirituality. It's absolutely integral to his story, and I think one of the things we can learn from his story is the necessity of engaging a spiritual perspective alongside a medical one as we consider suffering in general and melancholy and depression in particular. Lincoln's story is that he was raised in a strict Calvinist environment, really hardcore belief in sinners and eternal damnation for those who are not elected for salvation. He rejected that fundamentalist, you could say, worldview, and became in his 20s an infidel, and that was someone who was, I mean, he was an apostate. He was not necessarily irreligious, but he was extremely critical of the traditional religion in which he was raised. Over time, though, Lincoln became more and more interested in a spiritual perspective. He felt when he was in his deep depressions as a young man that he saw that religion could be a balm for suffering if one could believe it. He seemed to long for that kind of faith. And over time, he did develop his own very distinct and peculiar and frankly very hard to describe spiritual perspective. At his height was quite a sophisticated theological thinker, and there's a number of books about Lincoln's theology. If he had done nothing else and he did many other things, this theology would be worth studying in seminary, because he worked out a very complex and effective philosophy whereby he did deeply, deeply believe in a deity, but he also believed in the responsibility of man and in the mind of man as the kind of instrument of the divine will. So he didn't think that he was a puppet with his arms being lifted up left and right by some onboard operating system that was God. He thought that there was a design to the universe, and that design had set his mind in motion, and that it was his job to discover what he called God's will, but I think would have also been comfortable saying, you know, was what's the right thing to do? What moves us in the direction of justice and goodness and opportunity and benefit for all mankind. And he was fiercely committed to that, and it did bring him comfort that the suffering of his life and the suffering around him was bound up in a larger narrative of progress.
Did his spiritual view give him a sense of why he was suffering so much, or there was some reason behind it, or was part of that divine order?
Well, that's another great question, and at its core, what his spirituality was about was the faith that there was some reason that he needed to discover. He once said to his law partner that suffering is educative. It has a purpose to teach us something. He believed that his own personal suffering and also the suffering of the nation, which became bound up when he was president, there were hundreds of thousands of deaths in the Civil War, and many, many more injuries that were grievous, and people maimed and losing limbs and, you know, disfigured, and then all of the widows and the orphans of the men who had died. Lincoln suffered through that, but he also believed the war had come for a purpose, and that to turn away from it would be to turn away from this narrative of progress. It's an extremely dark story. It's a really awful story in many ways, and it's easy to romanticize, you know, wars that are a long time ago. It's easy to think of them as some kind of, you know, romantic conflict between right and wrong, and to dwell in the romance that right prevailed, but it was an extremely grim affair, and the private depression, the personal depression, and this sort of larger question of national suffering were really entwined, and Lincoln's solution to one and his solution to the other were also entwined, that the search for meaning, the search for purpose, the search for improvement.
You're listening to Madness Radio here on KABU Community Radio. This is our holiday membership drive. You know, KABU is funded by our listeners, and we're breaking into the programming for just a couple of moments to ask you to go to the phone and dial 877-500-5266. If you like what you're hearing, if you appreciate that we have an in-depth discussion about Lincoln's depression and the fact that it actually turned him into what has been, he's been referenced as one of the top presidents of this country, and his mental health state may have helped him to become that person. I mean, this is something that is unique to KABU, this type of discussion, and you're getting it. It's locally produced here at KABU, and I know that you have sought KABU out. You're listening to KABU, and I appreciate that. Now just complete the circle and become a member. Dial 877-500-5266. Maybe $5 a month is a great way for you to start as your membership. The number to call, 877-500-KBOO.
That's the starter kit, right, Jenka? The $5 a month. Yes, that's the gateway drug, and then we'll get you to give us more money. But whatever you can give, because we are really one of the most inclusive organizations probably in Oregon in terms of like bringing together people from many different diverse backgrounds, many actually diverse viewpoints. And we come together, we have a commonality around really caring about putting out, creating a community radio signal that really supports and amplifies what's the best in our community. And you can help that happen even on a larger scale by calling right now at 877-500-5266, or go online and click on kboo.fm, and you can, there I think you click on the give button and you can become a member that way. And when you do that, you become part of this growing and fantastic ensemble of people who really believe in the best, who believe in the best for Portland, who are able to look and think critically, see what's the best about our community, see what really needs to be changed, see where we can come together to really create much more positive energy. So give a call right now at 877-500-5266. I want you to think for a minute of like five things, of ways in which KABU has changed your life for the better. And think about what we do and how we, what our values are reflected in the way that you live your life, and how much you owe to KABU just for that. And for that reason alone, give a call at 877-500-5266 and become a member.
You know, KABU does so much for the community, and you, the community, do so much for KABU. It's a circle. We have restaurants that are contributing food. We have volunteers who are coming in and running this station. This is a way to turn depression and disempowerment into empowerment. You can become a radio owner right now. All you need to do is pick up your phone and dial 877-500-5266. This station keeps Portland connected, amplifying the voices and actions of the community. Over 800 volunteers were trained here last year alone. Call right now and support this station, support this community effort. 877-500-5266. We would love to thank you for your contribution of any amount. 877-500-KABU.
Even though Lincoln believed that there was purpose and meaning and some God's will or divine plan in both his own suffering and the suffering of the nation, it wasn't a resignation or an acceptance or a kind of passive perspective. There was also a very vital role for personal choice and decision and free will and effort and discipline and commitment to play in that.
That's exactly right. And those two, that is the dialectic, the combination of kind of opposites that we need to take away from Lincoln's life. And also a sense that, look, we are not at fault here. He said that melancholy is a misfortune, not a fault, and we should not blame ourselves for our suffering. And yet, we must embrace with all of our energy our responsibility to live good lives and to be good to the people around us.
So one of the most fascinating things about your book is how you describe Lincoln's powerful character, the qualities of his personhood that made him an incredible leader. You talk about how that was actually bound up in his struggle with depression itself, that it wasn't just some kind of mental flaw that he was pushing aside, but that the process of him dealing with his melancholy built and created and honed his skills and abilities as a statesman.
Yes.
Tell us about that, because we don't tend to think of depression as doing that. We think of it as a minus on the equation of our lives, but you're saying that something much more complicated was going on with Lincoln.
Again, we need to hold the two perspectives in mind. I mean, is it better to be depressed or not depressed? It's better to not be depressed. I mean, I'm literally now imagining, just as a metaphor, you know, having a weight on my shoulders. I prefer not to have it on it, but if that leads me to, you know, press down, you know, in my legs, in order to carry that weight, it's going to strengthen me over time. There is a value, and, you know, we see this all through time and arts and letters and science and matters of state. People who, you know, feel the woes of their own lives most acutely, you know, may develop a kind of depth that serves them well and that serves other people well. In psychology alone, you think about great lights, and William James is my favorite psychologist and philosopher. And this was a man who suffered enormously and was trying to understand it and was trying to help himself and was trying to help other people.
If you're just tuning in, this is Madness Radio, and our guest today is Joshua Wolf Schenck. He's the author of Lincoln's Melancholy: How Depression Challenged a President and Fueled His Greatness. And so what were some of the qualities that Lincoln developed through the struggle with his melancholy?
The things that made him feel better were reading and writing, which helped him connect to a world outside of his own mind and know that he was not alone, and it helped give voice. It helped articulate what was in his heart and his mind. And also these jokes and stories and this kind of this ritual of standing around a group of men, the lawyers that he was on the circuit with, or the guys in town and swapping these stories. You know, it's a kind of like a culture, if you can imagine, like a stand-up comedy show, except, you know, no one's on stage. It's just a group of people kind of in a circle, and they're taking turns, and they're trying to top each other. And this was also a huge part of Lincoln's life, and it made him a better communicator. It made him a lot of the way Lincoln communicated, a lot of what makes his rhetoric so powerful is that he could be a very high-minded philosopher, but he could also speak in the vernacular. He could tell very earthy stories, even bawdy stories, not in public, but in private. I mean, he would say a lot of things that mothers would want to cover their children's ears if they heard it.
How did his melancholy drive him to be this storyteller and kind of like a stand-up persona?
Well, it was just a very direct thing. This is what made him feel better. He said that these stories, the vents to my moods and gloom, that they gave him relief. It was pleasurable. It's such a common story that it's a cliche, but like many cliches, it reflects a deep truth. You're either going to laugh or cry, and laughter is a lot more fun and also something that you can join in with other people around.
So it was a way for him to no longer be isolated with his suffering, in a sense.
That's right.
And did he develop courage? Because I know that facing suicidal feelings in yourself is a terrifying, terrifying thing. And then repeatedly in his life as a politician, he had to develop the courage within himself to face extraordinary challenges. Was there a connection there as well?
I think so. You know, he was not rattled by the dark and the difficult and the challenging. He expected it. He was not optimistic in a way that led people to delusion. He tended to look for the worst in any situation in order to grapple with it. And that was certainly a lifelong habit of mine that sprang at least in part from his qualities of melancholy.
You mentioned a study that was done that actually demonstrates that people who are depressed have a more realistic perspective on what's happening. Can you tell us about that?
It's a classic psychological study, and it came up with this idea called depressive realism, that people who are depressed are more likely to understand the truth of a situation, even if it's kind of a grim truth. People who are not depressed tend to often distort reality in a way that makes them feel better. And there's the height of this perspective is a brilliant little paper that is a satire, but it bears a lot of truth, which a psychologist says he's going to diagnose happiness as a mental disorder. And he goes through and he lays out a lot of these cognitive distortions that happy people face. And I mean, if you go through the day not recognizing that you're going to die, not recognizing, you know, as you hurtle down the street, you know, at 85 miles an hour in a multi-ton vehicle, that you are inches away from calamity. I mean, if you do these things that we all absolutely need to do and not to be crippled by fear, you are actually dispelling a truthful quality of the world. And obviously, people who are depressed can become crippled by these fears and these realities, even if they're true. But there is value in it. There's value in grappling with the darkest elements of our realities.
So if someone who's happy might say, well, you know, things are going to get better, but Lincoln might more realistically, from his melancholy perspective, say, well, things are bad, but they might actually get a lot worse, which is kind of what happened with the Civil War. I mean, it was a spiral down into an absolute horror.
That's right.
Him to be the president of a nation that's going to war with so much violence, and to have that discipline and that courage to remain steady with his commitment must have taken an extraordinary ability to face the horrors of the situation that you're saying that maybe he learned from facing some of the horrors inside of himself.
Yes, that's very well said.
And were there other qualities that he developed out of his depression? You mentioned humility, I think.
Yeah, the humility is central. The sense that, you know, on some level, you know, we're not in control, and in order to get through this life, we need to capitulate to that and recognize that. And of course, humility is, you know, very different than, you know, a nihilistic resignation. Lincoln's humility certainly at his best, was humility that said, look, I am a very small piece in an order that's much bigger than anything I can comprehend. And yet I have my bit to do.
And here we are at KBOO. We're just a small piece in something much greater, but we are a very important small piece in this greater fight for a better future, for a better world, and for everything. Well, as a friend of mine once said, everything good and against everything bad. Here we are at KBOO, and you can join this great force for changing the course of history by calling 877-500-5266. Go online right now at kboo.fm and help us get over the top for this winter holiday pledge drive that we're having right now for the last 4 days. I'm Barbara Bernstein. I'm here with Jenker Sonneberg, and we're here to encourage you to go to your phone right now and become a member of KBOO by calling 877-500-5266 or go online at kboo.fm and click the Give button.
You know, maybe you are a depressive realist that's more likely to recognize the truth when you see it, or maybe someone who believes in cross-pollination, everyone doing their bit to participate in this community effort. Maybe you believe that our country is strongest when it helps to lift up its weakest members, and especially children, the disabled, the sick, the elderly, that is something that you value. Well, here at KBOO, we share those values. KBOO is a station that is devoted to the values of peace, justice, democracy, human rights, multiculturalism, freedom of expression, and social change. And you're here becoming informed about these issues between shows like Madness Radio, Disability Awareness, The Food Show, Pacific Underground, Black Book Talk, and many more. You find out about a wide variety of topics that impact you and the people around you. Put a price tag on that if you can, or maybe you would just like to contribute a small amount and make this effort possible. Maybe a $5 a month contribution is what works for you. We want you to call right now and make that call, make that commitment. 877-500-5266. This is a radical approach to problem solving, and it's a radical approach to fundraising, and yet it works. We put the call out and you call in, and it works. Voluntarily, people are contributing to this station in 51 years, keeping this effort going. You can do it. You can be a part of it. If you've never done it before, now is the perfect time to call 877-500-5266. You don't need a penny in your pocket right now, just $5 a month to say, I can do that for KBOO. I can do that for community radio. I can put up my $5 a month. All of those donations, all those members make this station happen. So all of you putting in $5 a month makes the budget possible. That's how it works. And it's amazing, and it keeps going 51 years. 877-500-5266.
And you might have noticed that you hear things on KBOO way before you hear them anyplace else. And I think this discussion we're listening to this morning about Lincoln's depression and how it actually stimulated him and inspired him to become the amazing president that he was, and more than that, a really visionary person. This is what KBOO is all about, and I think we are that. I wouldn't want to compare us to Lincoln, but we are definitely a very visionary radio station. Join the vision right now by calling 877-500-5266. Become a member of KBOO right now.
What do you think are some of the implications of your understanding of Lincoln's greatness being connected to his melancholy, the implications for our understanding about politicians and leadership today? Because we have this view that if you have any kind of mental flaw at all, you're disqualified. It's seen as a flaw. It's not seen as something that might actually build your character or give you strength. I mean, for some politicians, if it comes out that you've had any kind of mental health struggles, then people aren't going to vote for you, or they're not going to believe that you have this capacity. What do you think are some of the implications of that?
The big turning point in modern times was Thomas Eagleton, who was chosen by McGovern in 1972 to be his running mate, to be the candidate for vice president. And it emerged that he had had nervous breakdowns, had been in hospitals, and had had shock therapy. And that became a great scandal, and he withdrew from the race, and it was radioactive from then on out for any political figure to have any kind of mental health profile. And to this day, I mean, I don't think you would ever see a major political figure confessing to have been in psychotherapy. I mean, I know that Barack Obama is a big fan of Lincoln, and I wouldn't be surprised if he had read my book, but I don't think he would ever even say that, because it would just immediately kick up this firestorm of, you know, is he depressed? And in so many areas of life, we're so far beyond it. In the arts, and so many public figures can speak openly of their struggles, and we can recognize that a great deal of strength may coexist with this fantastic fragility that is, you know, struggles with mental health. But in politics, it's just entirely verboten. Their insistence on a kind of plastic, fake, relentlessly upbeat, optimistic perspective, and it's a disaster. It's just, leadership comes from reckoning with reality in a full way, and the kind of character who can reckon with reality is going to be one, you know, who experiences some darkness. As constituents, we should demand this of our leaders. A friend of mine recently sent me something that he wrote, and he said, I want you to read it if you have time, and I want you to tell me what you like and what you hate. And he said, if you don't hate any of it, I'm going to know you haven't read it. You know, we should say to our politicians, tell us about how you see the world in it, and if there isn't darkness in it, we know you're lying. We're not going to believe you. We're not going to trust you. And we need to shift the way that politicians are reported on, where these scandals are made of any kind of lapse into humanity. We need to just take a step back and say, what will we expect? Let's say, you know, in our families, we look up to our older brothers or our fathers or our mothers, you know. We understand that respecting them and admiring them is not inconsistent with seeing that they're human, that they make mistakes, that they have eccentricities, and we need to bring that same human perspective to the political realm.
And is there some quote or something you'd like to read us from the book, maybe something that Lincoln himself wrote?
Yeah, the first thing that comes to mind is a letter that Lincoln wrote in December 1862. He was president. The war was raging. It was actually an extraordinarily trying time for Lincoln. It seemed that the government was really falling apart. The war was turning badly. And an old friend of his from Illinois came around and asked him if he would write a condolence letter to a young woman who Lincoln had met. He knew the family. They were on the route that he traveled as a circuit lawyer. And this young woman, her name was Fanny McCullough, really interesting young woman, charismatic and unusually bright and very sensitive, very much like Lincoln himself when he was a young man. And when her father died, the whole circle around her was extremely concerned about how she would react. And indeed, when they told her, she got very upset, and then she had what looks like a kind of psychotic break. She was certainly became very disordered in her mind, and then went to her room and wouldn't leave and wouldn't eat. And everyone was, you know, was pulling out their hair, wondering how to be helpful to her. And one of a friend of the family thought that a note from the president might be a balm to her. And, you know, of course, these letters from, you know, politicians at moments of sensitivity are, that's a trope of public life. And usually they're, you know, they're form letters that are written by a speechwriter these days or by some kind of aide. Lincoln, when he had a break, took his pen. And we actually, the original letter exists, and he wrote this letter. This is December 23rd, 1862. Dear Fanny, it is with deep grief that I learn of the death of your kind and brave father, and especially that it is affecting your young heart beyond what is common in such cases. Oh, and I'm going to annotate the letter a little bit as I read it. So he says, beyond what is common in such cases, in other words, he understands that beyond the ordinary reaction to a father's death when you're a young woman, that there's something special about her grief, and he's, I think, recognizing her as a peculiar sufferer. And he goes on, in this sad world of ours, sorrow comes to all, and to the young, it comes with bitterest agony, because it takes them unawares. The older have learned to ever expect it. And here he's, you know, empathizing and connecting and helping her feel that it's okay to feel the way she feels, and acknowledging the reality of her experience. And then he kind of moves towards the next beat, he writes, "I am anxious to afford some alleviation of your present distress. Perfect relief is not possible except with time. You cannot now realize that you will ever feel better. Is not this so?" And this is, you know, getting right to the heart of the experience of depression. If we felt morbid, fearful, but we knew it would pass, it would be an entirely different experience. So much of depression is, you know, this getting locked in this lockbox, you know, from which it appears you have no key. You can't even access the mechanism that a key might turn in, and that it feels eternal. And he gets that. So he says, "Is not this so, that you cannot realize it, that you think you'll never feel better?" And then he says, "And yet, it is a mistake. You are sure to be happy again. To know this, which is certainly true, will make you some less miserable now. I have had experience enough to know what I say, and you need only to believe it to feel better at once." So this is actually very complicated thinking and very subtle. He's saying, "I'm not expecting you to feel better, but I want you to believe me that you will one day." And that itself, that belief, that faith is enough for you to endure this. And so having acknowledged the reality of her experience, he's very gently touching on some practical points about how she can endure and persist. And then as the letter closes, he touches on something much more forward-looking. He says, "The memory of your dear father, instead of an agony, will yet be a sad, sweet feeling in your heart of a purer and holier sort than you have known before. Please present my kind regards to your afflicted mother, your sincere friend." It's this last sentence holds out a promise of a certain kind of improvement, a melancholy improvement. He's not suggesting that she will be happier, but he's suggesting that by access to these feelings, there will be something purer and holier that she'll have access to, the sad, sweet feeling in her heart. And so, having acknowledged her experience and having suggested something of how she could endure it, he's offering a vision of what we might call transcendence, a kind of not leaving behind the woe, but the woe becoming integrated into some, you know, deeper meaning that in which we're even more connected to the world around us. So this letter, I think, really condenses a lot of the wisdom of that Lincoln achieved, and also the wisdom of his life experience, and the value of telling his story today, that we can see that he did these things in his life. He acknowledged his own depression. He was clear about it. He was not apologetic. He articulated his, you know, his innermost fears and desperation as a young man. He found ways to endure and persist, and he had his therapies, both medical and also kind of, you know, vocational and avocational, and he was always looking for the larger meaning, and what is this really about? Why am I going through this, and how can I be improved in service to my fellow men?
It's extraordinary just to hear his words as a writer, also the depth of his insight and wisdom, what he had been through personally and able to offer that about struggling with loss and depression. We are just about out of time, so remind us about your book and your new book and how people can get in touch with you.
My website is my last name, which is shenk.net, or you could just Google my name, Joshua Wolfshank. We've mostly been talking about Lincoln's melancholy. You can find more about it on my website. My most recent book is called Powers of Two, and the piece that we discussed briefly is also available online from the Atlantic magazine. It's called What Makes Us Happy, and I would love to hear from your listeners. You can email me on my website, join my mailing list, and I write to everyone who writes me, so... would be glad to be in touch.
Joshua Wolf Schenck, thank you for joining us today on Madness Radio.
Hey, thank you. You're a terrific conversation partner. I really got a lot out of it.
You've been listening to an interview with Joshua Wolf Schenck. He's the author of Lincoln's Melancholy, How Depression Challenged a President and Fueled His Greatness. That's all the time we have on Madness Radio. Thanks for tuning in. You've been listening to Madness Radio, Voices and Visions from Outside Mental Health, co-sponsored by the Icarus Project, Portland Hearing Voices, and Freedom Center. Madness Radio is hosted by Will Hall, and producer is Leah Harris. Madness Radio is based at KBOO in Oregon and can be heard on FM stations on the Pacifica Radio Network. Contact us at radio@madnessradio.net.
You're listening to KBOO, where we break through the stigmatism surrounding mental illness. Support Madness Radio right now in the last minute of this show. Now is the time to give. You've been putting it off. Now pull out your phone and dial 877-500-5266. As I hear this program about Lincoln, it's reminding me of the interview that Amy Goodman did with Greta Thunberg, who talked about her depression, how she was actually, for a year, did not speak. And then civic activism, social justice activism, got her engaged. And I hope that it will get you engaged. And a way to engage right now is to call KBOO and become a member of this station. 877-500-5266. It's a very easy way to be an activist.
And whether or not you're on the spectrum, and we are on many spectrums here at KBOO, give us a call again at 877-500-5266. Think about all the ways that KBOO has changed your life, and now you can help change ours for the better and help us be that more financially solvent if you give a call right now at 877-500-5266. Go online, kboo.fm, and thank you for becoming a member of KBOO.
KBOO would like to give special thanks to our local community partners who have donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Brunchbox with two locations, on the west side in downtown Portland at 620 Southwest 9th Avenue and on the east side at 676 Southeast Morrison Street. Brunchbox serves up a menu full of burgers and sandwiches every day from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. Lunch was provided by Little River Cafe, located in downtown Portland at 0315 Southwest Montgomery Street. Serving food made from fresh ingredients, Little River Cafe is open for breakfast and brunch daily from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. And dinner was provided by Dove Phoebe, located at 2727 Northeast Gleason Street in Portland. Open daily from 4 p.m. to 10 p.m., Dove Phoebe serves handmade corn.